welcome to the November episode of House Call, a podcast dedicated to your personal health and well-being. If you desire to live a healthier life, then you will be concerned about the food you eat, the liquid you drink, and the exercise you get. House Call will not only provide you with valuable health information, but will create an awareness of the importance of healthy living. In this episode, I sat down with Dr. Peter Landless, a board-certified nuclear cardiologist, and talked about the dangers of consuming alcohol. I began by asking Peter a question that came from one of our readers. I'm a senior in a church high school, but there is still peer pressure to drink alcohol. My uncle is a problem drinker, and I'm afraid of becoming hooked. Do you have any advice for me and for my school?
This is a very important question that has been asked, a question which we need to look at carefully. Alcohol consumption is becoming more and more common, especially among young people. And that is almost surprising considering it is a toxin in itself. Interestingly, tobacco, which kills half of the people that use it, is legal. And alcohol, which although purported at times to have beneficial health effects, is also a toxin to all cells in the body. And despite this, because of huge industry and commercial interests, we're finding that alcohol is increasing, the consumption is increasing.
It's so widely available and so socially acceptable that in order to be cool, you have to drink alcohol. At least that's the impression you get when you look at pop culture.
Absolutely right. It has become almost a rite of passage that as young people, particularly as they go to college, and probably 15 years ago, there was a very important task force on college drinking here in the United States, and it showed how significant the alcohol consumption is in college-going students. Between the age of 18 and 24, we see huge issues related to binge drinking, assault, people who are too drunk to know whether they had given consent to sexual relationships. And so we're seeing that this is something which is on the up and up. And what is happening more and more in the so-called, I call it a rite of passage, as it were, students and people in general, because binge drinking is increasing, drink in order to get drunk. So it's not just to have the odd drink here and there and maybe as a social thing. That is happening a lot as well. But actual drinking in order to get drunk is something which has increased dramatically over the last 15, 20 years.
So there's actually been an increase because alcohol has been around since the beginning of time. But what you're saying is there's a steady increase or is there a drastic increase in alcohol consumption?
It's been a steady increase. And what has brought the attention of those who work in public health very significantly to this problem has been what is called the non-communicable diseases. Non-communicable diseases are those diseases which are not related to an infection, for example, as is pneumonia, malaria. But the non-communicable diseases are those like cancer, lung diseases, heart disease, high blood pressure, obesity. Those are the non-communicable diseases. And that increase of NCDs, as they're called, non-communicable diseases, has led to a focus which shows that the increasing use of alcohol has played a significant role in increasing the non-communicable diseases. And this is important to emphasize because alcohol has been purported to have health benefits. And yet we're seeing that there is more and more robust literature which is becoming available, which tells us that there is really no safe level of alcohol intake.
Are there any benefits to drinking alcohol?
In 1979, there was a scientific study done, published in a very prominent medical journal, the Lancet Medical Journal, which talked about what is called the French paradox. People in an area in France who were eating very fatty and unhealthy foods and a lot of it, and were drinking red wine, in this one portion of France were found to have a lesser incidence of heart disease and heart attacks. That drew the attention of some researchers, and they then went and analyzed why this would be so. The conclusion they drew was that they were drinking red wine with this food, with all its fats and unhealthiness, and that was giving them a protective effect. That then got dubbed, as I mentioned, the French paradox, and for close to 40 years. This has been a major and continues to be a major selling point for alcohol. There were then other studies done which showed that the moderate consumption of alcohol, one glass, one and a half glasses a day, would protect from heart attacks. And so moderate drinking was touted for prevention of heart disease. Then further meta-analyses or further studies reanalyzing all the data were done. And it was found that a number of those studies had included data which had what we call confounding variables. In other words, there were factors which made it difficult to really draw the conclusions that were drawn. What were those factors? Some of the people who were regarded as being non-drinkers in the studies had previously been drinkers. So that would normally have excluded them from being studied in this kind of data. Then they looked at socioeconomic levels. The people who did better as far as health outcomes, drinking moderate alcohol, were also shown to have better social standing, better economic status, better income, and health insurance. So those are four confounding factors which come in. So is it the alcohol or is it the better health style? They were also found that they were eating a more balanced and healthy type of diet. This stimulated people to go back and reanalyze. And in 2006, there was a very significant paper which came out, which showed that the issues we're talking about of the confounding factors were very, very significant and needed to be teased out so we would understand, is alcohol beneficial? When that was done in the meta-analyses done in that year, it was found that actually when you take and you equalize socioeconomic status, education, health insurance, exercise, healthful living as factors in all of those individuals who were studied, you find that if those were equalized and made correct, that alcohol has no beneficial effect. The argument continued because there have been some studies, and none of the studies have been what we call prospective studies. Because alcohol is so addictive, it would be unethical to take someone who doesn't drink alcohol and say to them, now, we're going to put you on a test. You take alcohol, and we have a group who's not taking alcohol, to see whether or not you're going to get a health benefit. Not only because of the addictive components, but because of the many other issues related to alcohol consumption. Mm-hmm. So because of that factor, we don't have studies going forward. We can only look back at studies which have been done about other topics and then draw conclusions. So a study has now come out, a huge study, analyzing over 600,000 patients. That's a big, big number. This is a watershed study published again in the Lancet Medical Journal, 23rd of August, 2018, in which it shows without any shadow of a doubt that there is the only safe level of alcohol consumption for your health is a level of zero. Zero consumption is the only safe way to go. In other words, abstain from it. Mm-hmm. Don't take it. Don't drink it. Why would that be? They showed all cause effect of negative outcomes, including cardiovascular, heart disease, hypertension, strokes, cancer. Very importantly, cancer is a very significant side effect or negative effect of alcohol consumption. And it's particularly on that, apart from all the other issues related to addiction, violence, trauma, domestic violence, accidents, that without any shadow of a doubt, there is no safe level of alcohol intake.
I just wonder if this information gets out there, is this going to have an impact on the level of consumption?
You know, I wish that would be the case. When it became legal, and not only legal, mandated, that cigarette boxes should have warnings on them. Danger, the use and consumption of tobacco can lead to heart attacks, can lead to cancer, can lead to strokes, etc. It hasn't led to that huge amount of reduction as one would have expected it to be. So knowledge and behavior are two different things. Many of us as human beings have what we call the knowledge-behavior disconnect. I know I should exercise every day. Do I do it? Do you do it? Well, only each one of us can answer that question.
That's
but
right.
Knowing something and practically implementing it are not the same thing. What I do hope will happen when this kind of robust information is embraced, which it is being by World Health Organization and other strong bodies that promote health throughout the world, that there will become a much greater awareness and a greater willingness to put aside the very, very tiny benefit that comes to a very small group in the population in preventing heart attacks, and realizing that the overall negative effects of alcohol are so great that one shouldn't take it at all. That's the way we need to be.
I've heard people say, well, I drink socially. I'm not addicted to alcohol. What are actually the chances of becoming addicted if one does drink?
You know, if you were to take, and that's a very, very good question. If you were to take people we call alcohol naive, in other words, they've never taken alcohol, and subject them to their first alcohol drink. Take 100 people. 7 of those people stand a chance of becoming addicted to alcohol. So the chances would be in an average population of 7%, 7 out of 100. Then we go to the next factor. If an individual has a what we call a first degree relative, what is a first degree relative? It's a father, mother, uncle, aunt, grandfather, mm-hmm. grandmother. Has a first-degree relative who's been what is euphemistically called a problem drinker or an alcoholic, the chances then double. So we go up to 14%. So 14 out of 100 instead of 7 out of 100. Now, it doesn't stop there. When you look at the initiation or the first drink or the debut, the first time an individual takes alcohol, that has an effect on whether or not they become a problem drinker or not. So if you can put off the initiation until the age of 21, you find that the percentage of problem drinkers is much lower. But what is sadly happening, initiation of alcohol consumption is starting between the ages of 9 and 12 around the world. And so what you see when that happens, if you have a first degree relative with the 7% of the average risk of the population, so 7 plus 7 is 14. You then add the early age onset, early teens, mid-teens. You then jump the percentage up to between 30 and 45-50%. So you're looking at huge increases in the chances of addiction related to family history, age of onset of drinking, and the availability.
Peter, what do you say to that person that is struggling, that is looking to kick the habit of alcohol consumption? What kind of hope, what kind of resources could we share with that person?
I would encourage people who are struggling with an alcohol problem to seek help from someone who, number one, cares about them, someone who will encourage them, and someone who will hold them accountable. Then there are programs like Alcoholics Anonymous, AA. Support groups. In the Seventh-day Adventist Church, we are working around the world to try and get people engaged in Adventist recovery ministries, which is based on a spiritual approach using the 12-step program. It's very important for people to realize there has to be a good support group.
Is there a website for that 12-step program?
AdventistRecoveryMinistriesGlobal.org.
Peter, what other words of encouragement can you share as we bring this podcast to a close?
We need to realize this is a very, very difficult issue. We need to open our arms, our churches, our society needs to be aware of the struggles individuals face as they try to get over the issue. One can notice from the seasoned people who've worked with Alcoholics Anonymous, Adventist Recovery Ministries as well, that people who come to the recovery groups will not say, I was an alcoholic. They say, I am an alcoholic, even when they are free of the immediate problem of alcohol, because the possibility of returning back to the habit is high. And so there needs to be that ongoing support, that ongoing mentoring, that ongoing caring. We live in such a fast-paced world. Everybody's busy. Everybody's trying to get the things done they have to do. We have to stop, pause, take stock, and see what we can do to help. You know, in Alcoholics Anonymous, they talk about the higher power. The higher power comes as we invite Christ, the Lord, our God, into our heart, into our struggle. And if we do that, by His grace and through His Spirit, we can gain the victory, not only over alcohol, but over so many other things.
Thank you, Peter, so much for being here today. We hope you've enjoyed this episode of House Call with Dr. Peter Landless. This podcast is here to provide health tips and information on how to live a healthier life. For more information on healthy living, go to positivechoices.com. You can also subscribe to this and other podcasts by going to araudio.org or wherever you get your podcast. Until next time, stay healthy and keep exercising.